Thank you for calling AA.
Hi. Is this AA?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tom. Hi, this is Tom Gleason. I'm a patients' rights activist.
And I was... One moment, sir.
Okay.
Thank you for calling AA General Service Office. How may I direct your call?
Hi, this is Tom Gleason. I'm a patients' rights activist. Who am I talking to now?
My name is Kelly. How can I help you?
Hi, Kelly. Are you the Public Information Committee?
No, I'm the receptionist.
Oh, is there any way I can talk to the...
I sent you over to, did she just call?
No, this is my first call.
Oh, okay. You want to speak to somebody?
Well, I was hoping to...
Public information?
I was hoping to talk to Greg Tobin, the general manager, or...
Well, if it's a public information question, it would be, you would go through the channels, and first it would be Clay you'd speak to.
What's the name?
The name is Clay Rittenhouse. I'll take you right over.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for calling the General Service Office. My name is Clay. Can I help you?
Hi, Clay. This is Tom Gleason. I'm a patients' rights activist for mental health patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling to let you know that I'm upset that mental health professionals who are also members of AA are requiring patients to attend AA meetings as a condition of therapy or psychiatric treatment.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, they refuse to treat me on that basis, and I've heard from a lot of other people that are also being refused treatment unless they join AA. And I'm calling to let you know that it's a violation of patients' rights. It's like requiring a therapy client to attend Catholic Mass or any other kind of church. Yeah. So the reason I'm calling is that I would like it if you made it more clear to your members who are also professionals that this is not following the patients' rights laws and HIPAA laws, and that the AA unity can't come before those secular laws.
Well, here's the bottom line. We don't comment on the law because we have no knowledge of law.
Well, you do have, it's possible to have knowledge of the law.
Comment on it.
Well, your members do, though. Your members are licensed professionals, they're doctors, they're therapists and psychiatrists, and they know the law. And
that is their professional responsibility. That is not them as AA members.
Right. Well,
that's in their professional capacity.
Right. Well, my concern is that as AA members, they are taught that AA unity comes first. And this is done through the program itself and through the hospitals and institutions committees that you guys organize to go into hospitals and recruit members from the patients. So that would be an opportunity.
We honestly don't recruit members.
Well, I was reading documents from the hospitals and institutions committees, and they go into a hospital and they tell people about AA, and they set up a connection so that when they get out of the hospital, they can join the AA meetings. And it's also, right, and it's supposed to be voluntary, but in my experience, a lot of the subsequent outpatient treatment that you go to, say you go to see a psychiatrist afterwards, if you went to a psychiatric ward, and then you have an outpatient psychiatrist who might happen to be a member of AA, and they will refuse to treat you if you're not participating in the AA groups. So I don't know if you're aware that this goes on, because I know that you have manuals like cooperating with the professional, and these are training manuals to tell your members how to convince professionals to do just this.
Not at all. That's not at all what we tell people to do.
Well, is it not true that that your members approach, they solicit professionals as well as being professionals themselves to say that, to tell their patients to go to AA?
No.
You're saying that that doesn't happen?
I'm saying that we don't tell them to do that.
Well, the Cooperating with the Professionals manual is a whole book that has form letters to contact clergy and professionals. And
inform them about what AA has to offer.
Right, and inform them. But does it inform them that... So my concern is that there's two different things here. There's professionals who are AA members, and they know what AA is, and they try to push that on their clients. Or there's professionals who are just contacted by your Cooperating with the Professionals teams, and they might not know that AA is a religious group based on...
It's not religious.
Well, it says... It claims to not be religious, but a lot of Supreme Courts, I think in 50% of the states, have ruled that it's a religious...
That's not true.
Well, it is true that if somebody gets a DWI or something, they can sue, and they usually win when it goes to the Supreme Court based on religious grounds. I'm talking to somebody in New York State. Do you know about the... Oasis is the Oasis. Yeah, in 2002 there was a federal decision that said that Oasis providers that received government money could not coerce the attendance of AA meetings based on that fact that it's a religious activity and they were receiving government funds to do it. So any Oasis...
I think it was a little more involved than that, and it wasn't that it declared us a religious entity. It had to do with people who were under the control of the courts needing to be provided options. It did not declare AA religious.
Well, I can send you more information. There was a notice. It was about...
As it may. I mean, we are not a religious organization.
Okay. Well, as far as it not being a religious organization, it's also a public meeting. It's a public group that has no confidentiality agreements among themselves. You know, they say, in the meeting, they say what's said here stays here. But if I go to a psychiatrist, I think that I'm getting some kind of a treatment, and then they send me to a public meeting and I go and confess my sins to a network of people that half the town knows.
That's not what suggested an AA to do.
Well, that's what happens, though.
No, not really. We sometimes share those types of things with an individual that's a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
No one is encouraged to share details like that in public meetings.
Okay, well, so the whole point of my call is really to encourage you to make sure that your members who are professionals know that they need to make this information available to people, that they don't have to go to an AA meeting, and that they don't...
See,
that
we don't advise professionals on their activity as professionals.
Right.
All we have to do is we talk about how to stay sober in AA. We do not advise professionals on how to do their job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, I think this is really important because to get back to my original point was that this made me suicidal. I mean, I had a therapist that I trusted. Psychiatrists wouldn't treat me. They refused to even speak to me because I wasn't going to meetings. And this was, this is very similar to a kind of like cult disconnection, shunning type phenomena that...
But that's not AA.
Well, it was
people that you have a problem with.
Well, it was on the basis of AA because it was... Well,
we didn't tell them to do any of these things. We discourage all of that. Your problem is with the medical professionals.
Right.
Who deserve it.
Right, so what I'm doing is I want to help you to make it clear to your members that they're interpreting your words wrong, maybe. If they think that they somehow need to force people into AA, or if they think that it's somehow helpful to impose consequences on people for not entering into 12-step treatment, then they're getting that message from somewhere.
I have no idea where. And we're not here to tell professionals how to do their job. We are not professionals. We don't have that kind of expertise to offer.
Okay. So, just in closing, I think that I've given you the message that I wanted to get across. So I hope that you take it seriously. And
my suggestion to you, my strong suggestion, would be to contact the medical authorities and the medical groups who certify these people.
Right. The thing I've run across in trying to do that is that there are also AA members on the licensing boards and things like that that basically make the complaints disappear.
Saying that there are AA members there. How do you know that?
Well, the reason I know it is, like, say they repeatedly referred me there. They wrote a book about how to force people into AA. My own interventionist, he wrote the book on the ARISE intervention, which is engaging with the family to get people into substance abuse treatment, and he's a OASIS counselor, and the book mentions AA multiple times, and he told me personally that he's an AA member. So, and similarly with other professionals that I ran into who were doing this to me, there were indications that they were AA members and that they had the tradition one coming before, say, my rights or basic medical ethics. Well, tradition one says that AA unity comes first, and AA must continue to live or most of us will surely die.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty strong statement. So if you, I mean, it implies that if you engage, if you assist anybody in questioning AA's practices, say somebody comes in for treatment and they don't like AA, they don't want to be there. Well, are you going to encourage that or discourage that if you believe that?
It has nothing to do with tradition. We're only here for people who want to be here. This is a voluntary association.
Right. So as professionals, though, right, but you have members who are professionals, and when a professional says they can't help somebody because they don't want to be in AA, you know, basically the idea is we do AA. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. But if every professional is doing that, there's nowhere for somebody to go. They can't find a therapist. They can't find a psychiatrist because...
I can tell you just from my own personal experience and understanding, there are lots of people out there with lots of options for AA.
It wasn't my experience in a certain circle. I'm from Albany, New York, so, I mean, it's pretty... Pretty much, I think there's a medical society. The director is on the board of AA. So there is a relationship between medical groups, medical associations, and
that's a hospital administration group.
Okay, yeah, I don't know too much about that. I'm talking about my own personal experience of just not being able to basic patients' rights. I saw it on the wall. It said that you're allowed to file a complaint and you're entitled to a reasonable response. Well,
absolutely.
Right. So when that doesn't happen, and there are AA members on the licensing board that might enforce those rights, how does that work if AA members are protecting each other like that for violations of medical ethics?
The fact that people are AA members is pertinent to what they do in an AA room and what they do in their personal life. But AA has no authority over what they do in their professional lives. Nor do we have any authority over what they do in AA for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's misbehaving, they're misbehaving, whether they're AA members or not.
Well, would you agree that that's misbehaving if you refuse to treat a patient on the grounds that they don't go to AA?
I am not going to make any statement about what a professional chooses to do or not do, but I just don't have the information here or the skills to make that kind of a decision.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not really that difficult because the laws are pretty clear. I can't imagine that. Well, I don't know. I guess there have been licensing boards that came back to me and said that there's nothing wrong with that. But to me, it seems wrong. And I just want to bring your attention to that because I've talked to a bunch of people who have been through very similar experiences of either not being treated, treated poorly, or being in a psychiatric hospital and being forced to go to those AA panels. The AA panels. Yeah,
the people that can help you.
Well, you're just as the you're the public information committee.
Mm-hmm.
So you are sort of in charge of the information that gets out to your members, right?
No. Really not. We have no authority over the AA fellowship. We're just here to share with them the information that we have, that they have shared with us. And we're here to help them communicate. But we don't tell them what to do. We have no authority over the groups at all.
Okay, so on the box 459 publication, it says we all win when we have broad discussion. This is quotes from 2016. It says we all win when we have broad discussion, listening to the minority voice and find the collective group conscience. Now I'm an AA member, maybe I'm not, but I can't even comment on whether I'm an AA member or not, right? Because nobody can. But assuming that I'm an AA member, I'd be a minority voice here because my opinion on this is not.
I would encourage you to share that voice at your group.
Mm-hmm. So, but you wouldn't be able to assist me in getting the message across to other AA members through being on the public information.
You know, that's not how that works.
No.
The conversation starts at the group and flows from there. It doesn't come from me to the group.
Okay, so in how would a message get from a group up to your level?
Through the district and through the delegate.
Okay, so there would need to be minority opinions.
Anybody can write and share a message with me. But if you're talking about how to get the conversation going and how to inform the fellowship, it comes from the group out, not from me to the group.
Okay. Well, this is a lot for me to think about, it's an ongoing conversation between me and other people who have been through similar experiences. And me personally, I ended up suicidal. I was hospitalized multiple times because of the refusal of AA members to even acknowledge my complaint or my existence.
Sure, I don't know who these AA members are.
So I can.
Medical personnel.
Yeah.
They're acting as medical personnel. That has nothing to do with AA.
Okay. Well, when
we don't have doctors.
All right.
We
don't when they engage in shunning type practices where they are refusing to speak to somebody because they won't engage with AA, that is them not acting as a medical professional. That's them acting
as
a
medical professional.
No, medical professionals don't act like that.
What they're doing.
Okay. I mean, technically they're in the capacity of a medical professional, but they're not acting in the with the ethics of a medical professional.
Then you should go to their ethics board and let them know.
Right, I have. And yeah, I'm gonna keep doing that. But I was just okay. So I'll let you go. But I just want you to know that this.
I mean, I understand completely.
Yes.
But what I guess I'm trying to express to you is the unique relationship AA has with its members. We don't have the authority to tell our members to do anything. Our members tell us what to do.
Right, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that you will help just make this information available, the fact that we had this conversation. So, you know, when you have a meeting about these pamphlets or the brochures that you make to talk about cooperating with professionals, this topic should come up, whether I'm at those meetings or not, because maybe I'm not going to be at the meeting when that happens. So I want somebody else to voice my opinion for me. So it's not just my opinion, it's a bunch of people.
They should go to their home groups and voice it there.
Okay, I'll let you go now, but thanks.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.